Welcome to the Accenture MIT podcast series. Here's Daniel Jackson, professor of computer science at MIT.
In my last podcast, I talked about Adobe Lightroom. I described four factors that led directly to its success. As promised, in this podcast, I'll talk about four more. But while last time I focused on software development process and broader issues, this time I'll focus on some key software engineering innovations. They're interesting because they represent, in my opinion, some general trends in software applications. When I finish my little paean for Lightroom, I'll tell you about one particular thing that I think was a major mistake in its design. So here we go with four software engineering factors important for the success of Lightroom. Number one is the choice of programming language. The core number crunching of Lightroom and Photoshop, the part that actually does the image processing, is done by a shared component called Adobe Camera Raw, and not surprisingly, is written in C and C++. Apparently over the years, though, Adobe has been moving away from C++ due to its complexity, using Objective-C in particular for Mac versions of their apps. When they started the development of Lightroom, they decided to do something quite brave, to build the bulk of the application not in C or C++ or even Objective-C, but in Lua, a scripting language. Camera Raw would stay in C, but just about everything else, all the logic and user interface controls, would be in Lua. Lua was invented in Brazil in the mid-1990s. It took its syntax from Modular and from Clue, a favorite language of mine designed at MIT in the 1970s, and as someone once said about Algol, an improvement on most of its successors. Lua took the idea of using tables as a pervasive data structure from the associative arrays of Orc, now very familiar in the hashes of languages like Python and Ruby. From Scheme, it took the idea of lexical scoping and the ability to pass functions around as first-class objects and to create anonymous functions on the fly. And like all modern languages, and in stark contrast to C and C++, it provides automatic memory management. Most significantly for our story, Lua has an API that makes it easy to integrate Lua code with code written in C. You can call C functions from Lua, and you can call Lua functions from C, and you can pass data objects between them. Another interesting feature of Lua is that unlike languages such as Python and Ruby, Lua is compiled, rather than interpreted, into a bytecode which is very low level. It's almost a machine language, and as a result, Lua programs run much faster than programs written in most other scripting languages. Lua became popular as a language for building games, in particular World of Warcraft, and as far as I know, it wasn't used for serious applications until it was adopted by Lightroom. As a small development project, Lua was a big risk for Adobe. Adopting it would mean maintaining a Lua infrastructure for themselves, and that's exactly what they did. They built their own bridges, for example, between Lua and Objective-C. They built their own debugger, a code browser, their own profilers, and a lint-like tool to catch some of the typos that would have been caught in a statically typed language. Apparently, they're even working on a Lua IDE. This risky decision has turned out to be a huge success for Adobe. They say that programmers are so much more efficient writing code in Lua that QA can't keep up. About two-thirds of the code written by the Lightroom team is in Lua. Factor number two is that, in contrast to older apps like Photoshop, Lightroom doesn't store its data in variables declared throughout the code. Instead, the designers of Lightroom opted to use an off-the-shelf database, in particular SQLite. This meant that they didn't have to worry so much about the stability of the data. They didn't have to develop complex code to read and write to files. And most importantly, they could access the data in a high-level way using SQL queries. Another way to view this is that using a relational database, you get a much cleaner separation of concerns between data semantics and data representation. If you haven't listened to it, I encourage you to find my earlier podcast series on separation of concerns. One of the episodes was about exactly this issue. In fact, the Adobe engineers built an ORM, an object relational mapper, to allow the database to be accessed directly through Lua objects. Sounds familiar? Lightroom, in short, is a web app. Admittedly, it doesn't have a JavaScript front end, and there's no HTTP going on here. But as an application, the technologies it uses are exactly those of today's server-side apps: a database, a scripting language, and an ORM connecting the two. This shows, I think, that there are independent reasons for choosing this combination, unrelated to the web. The relational model is a great way to design and access data, and it's more compatible with object-oriented programming than most people realize. Moreover, huge amounts of work have gone into making databases that can store data dependably and access it efficiently, and in more advanced applications to handle concurrency, transactions, integrity constraints, and so on. And it makes no sense to reinvent the wheel and do all this stuff yourself at the application level. Scripting languages are very attractive because they are in general so much simpler and easier to use than complex languages like C++. There is a major downside, though. It's that scripting languages are invariably dynamically typed. This means that although they prevent type errors at runtime, for example, an attempt to add a string and an integer together, or interpreting an integer as an address, and are in this respect much better and safer than C or C++, they don't allow these kinds of errors to be caught at compile time, because there are no type declarations, and they allow a variable's type to change during execution, holding an integer at one point and a string at another. This is very unfortunate, because it means that lots of errors that could be easily detected at compile time are missed. The Adobe team had to make up for this by doing more extensive testing and by writing their own special tools. There are languages, most recently Scala, that try to combine the benefits of lightweight scripting languages with static type systems, but they haven't caught on yet. Factor number three is immutability. I explained this idea in one of my first Accenture podcasts. In short, it means that instead of mutating a data structure, changing its value over time, computation creates new objects and the old ones remain in place. Lightroom exploits this idea in the way that photos are edited. To understand how this works, let's consider first how editing works in Photoshop. There, an image is a massive two-dimensional array of pixels. When you use a Photoshop tool, what you're doing is modifying one of these arrays. For example, if your tool is a brush that darkens the image, then at every point you touch, the pixels are replaced by pixels representing a darker color. This computational model has two major drawbacks. One is that it's very hard to undo actions, and for that reason, files in Photoshop are usually structured in layers, with each layer being one of these massive arrays created by applying some function. You can then undo the function by simply removing the layer. The other problem is that the amount of storage you need is huge, because you need to store this massive array, and you need to store one of these arrays for every single layer. A single photo that starts out as a 10 megabyte in-camera raw image very soon becomes 50 or even 100 megabytes once it's been edited and has a few layers. Lightroom takes a very different approach. The image is still a two-dimensional array of pixels, but this is kept in its original compact raw format. Actions don't affect the array directly. There's no modification of the pixels. Instead, each action that is performed is stored as a command. Whenever a version of the image is needed that reflects the actions applied so far, Lightroom simply replays the actions one at a time to reconstruct the image. Of course, using caching, you can save these modified images so that you don't need to keep reconstructing them. But the point is that when the file is saved to disk, Lightroom only needs to save the original raw file and the list of actions applied to it. From the user's perspective, this is wonderful because as well as having much smaller files, you never risk damaging the original captured image, and you always have available the history of actions so you can see what changes you made and can undo them easily if you want to. Now, making this all work in Lightroom is actually much trickier than it sounds. For one thing, it means that you need to find a compact way to represent all commands. For a simple slider, like adjusting brightness, that's easy. But it's harder when you have to encode the effect of the user moving a brush around the image. Another thing that's tricky is that Lightroom lets you take a bunch of adjustments applied to one image and apply them to another. This means that the adjustments must have the same effect whatever order they're applied in, and that means that in mathematical terms, they need to commute. This is in fact only true of low-level adjustments like brightness and contrast and so on, and more complex adjustments such as denoising and sharpening don't actually have to commute, but they do have to be applied in a very careful order. Factor number four is metadata. You can think of Lightroom as an editor for metadata. The actual data content is the original captured image. On top of this is all sorts of data about this data. When it was captured, on what equipment, with what settings, in which location, and so on. Much of the editing done by a user is just creation of more metadata, such as adding ratings or captions or keywords and so on. In fact, Lightroom allows all the edits you do to the image itself to be stored as metadata also, so that if the raw file is transferred to another application, such as Photoshop, it carries all the edits with it. This is nice for another reason. It means that if the Lightroom database gets corrupted, you can reconstruct most of it from the metadata in the image files. There is one downside to this scheme. If you don't put the metadata in separate files, then a small change to the metadata is a small change to a potentially very large file. So if you're backing up or synchronizing your files, then a change of a few hundred bytes requires replacing a file of 10 megabytes, which uses unnecessary bandwidth. So there are the four software engineering factors that I would attribute Lightroom's innovation and success to. They were 1, using a high-level scripting language, Lua, rather than C++. 2, storing data in an off-the-shelf relational database, in this case SQLite. 3, exploiting immutability by representing edits using commands rather than by modifying a pixel array. And 4, treating almost all data except for the raw image itself as metadata. I've noted that the first two are the key features of web apps, and the second two are common features of web-based systems too. So Lightroom is an interesting example of a desktop application that's really a web app in disguise, and to my mind, an indication of where many apps will be going in the next few years. Finally, I promised I'd reveal the one thing I don't like about Lightroom. So here it is. It's that the application assumes there is only one Lightroom catalog. Sure, you can create multiple catalogs, each with its own instance of the database, but you can only have one open at any given time. The Lightroom designers no doubt did this because they assumed that users would usually have only one single catalog, and that they'd use collections within the catalog for top-level organization. But speaking for myself at least, I don't like this approach. When the catalogs get bigger, performance slows down, and a crash of a big catalog means potentially losing more data. Also, if you do frequent backups, since the catalog is represented as one big file, the larger the catalog, the higher the incremental cost of backing up small changes. So what I do is I create a new catalog each year. So for every year, I have one catalog, and I let that catalog grow until the end of the year, and then I save it and start a new one. Most of the time, this works just fine, but it means that moving images from one catalog to another is really painful, since you can't just drag and drop them. This scheme of assuming that there is just one catalog when the application runs is an example of what the design patterns community calls singleton. And in programming, it's almost always a bad idea, since the assumption of there being only one catalog is made throughout the code, it's probably near impossible to reverse the decision at this point. For this reason, I always tell my students that if you're considering making anything a singleton, think again. That's all I have to say about Lightroom for now. Let me know what you think by posting comments online on my Accenture blog. Goodbye.
Copyright 2010, Daniel Jackson. Music copyright 2010, Chris Bremer from pianosociety.com.